Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And as always, I hope wherever you are that you're doing well and you're healthy and you're making it through these troubled, turbulent times. It's been a very difficult couple of months, and slowly but surely places are starting to open up across the world, and I hope wherever you are that things are going well. But we're here to talk about Formula One, and as always, there's lots of news to talk about. Lots of Vettel news, as you might expect, after the Schalke announcement came out last week that he would not be going back to Ferrari after the end of this year, and that of course has kicked off a whole lot of speculation, so we're going to get to that in due course. And just to make things more difficult, possibly for myself, I decided in my own infinite wisdom to download and install a new version of my recording software right before I sat down to do the show. And, well, I'll find out in, probably an hour from now, by the time I get finished recording this, whether or not that was a good or bad decision. So, well, let's just say at least on the monitor it looks good. Of course, the real acid test will be when I go back and just listen to it briefly before I start processing it. And I'm hoping that I haven't done something foolish here, but we will wait and see. Anyways, let's get into the news. And, well, let's start where we've been talking about for, well, a good number of weeks now. I think almost for 2 months, really. But anyways, sources are saying out there that the teams in the paddock and Formula One have decided to really approve this really radical rule and budget change package that they've been talking about for a good number of weeks now. And a lot of this is, of course, to do with the fallout from the whole coronavirus pandemic situation and the fact that we've lost God only knows how many races now. Was it 8, 9, 10? I've lost count. Anyways, lots of money has been lost in revenues, terms of revenues for Formula One and the teams. And, well, I mean, it's the same for everyone. Doesn't matter what walk of life you come from at the moment. Everybody's struggling through something. But anyways, so the big thing, one of the big sticking points was the budget cap that was being cut from $175 million down to $145 million for next year. And, well, McLaren has been saying for a couple of weeks, if not longer, that they were in favor of reducing this budget cap as low as $100 million for next year. And Ferrari were, well, really dug their heels in and said that they would not be willing to go below $145 million. Anyways, apparently, after a lot of discussion back and forth, they've decided to, on a glide path, which is the word that I love in the report that I found, the glide path down to $140 million in 2022 and $135 million per year after that. And apparently Ferrari was able to compromise and threw their weight behind it. And, you know, it's still, maybe it's just the way that I grew up. Maybe it's just the way that I remember Ferrari being for so many years, but it seemed every time that there was any kind of suggestion of changes to anything in Formula One, that Ferrari would always seem to be the most vociferous and the ones threatening to pack up and go home and leave the sport. And it really hasn't been like that in the last several years. Of course, the big change that we're not going to see it next year, of course, but the big change that everybody had been talking about for, well, pretty close to a year and a half, maybe 2 years, with the rules overhaul that was going to come into effect in 2021. Now it's been pushed back a year or so because of the ongoing coronavirus situation and the fact that it was going to be difficult just to, in a normal timeline to be able to roll out these new cars for 2021. And that scenario just went right out the window, what with everything shutting down the global economy over the past couple of months. And wisely, they decided to put it off. Anyways, like I say, this whole era of, I wouldn't say outright cooperative spirit, but certainly a lot of willingness is something that maybe people of my age, I don't want to date myself by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when you grew up, and I was really got into Formula One when I was a kid in the late 80s and in the 90s and beyond, and it seemed every time there was some talk of any change, Ferrari would always seem to threaten to pull out, and certainly not. But of course, in this day and age, and everything that has really been flipped upside down over the past several months, it really is in everybody's best interest to sit down and find a way out beyond the next, well, the immediate future. I mean, we don't know how long this thing is going to go on for. We don't know for sure how long or how many races we're going to get in this year. There's, you know, that is a fluid situation, as it was very dynamic, a couple of months ago with races being canceled left, right, and center. Now everything is focusing on and slowly but surely starting up, and that's starting to shift around too. But of course, this whole situation to find some more stability in this rapidly changing and unstable world that we're living in at the moment was really in the best interest of everyone. I mean, not everybody has deep pockets that can afford to weather this storm, and I'm not saying that for the big boys in Formula One like Ferrari, Mercedes, maybe even Red Bull. That anybody is really in a good situation to weather it. I suppose some teams are probably better off than others, but certainly when you have some of the smaller teams that are just struggling to get by just on an annual basis, that the long-term survivability of the sport and just the whole economic model that they have to operate in is something that is beneficial to all of them. So anyways, the budget cap a part of it, but there's also a different set of rules that are going to be part of this package, including a radical aero development handicap system, where the worst performing teams are allowed more wind tunnel and CFD development time compared to the more successful teams. So, you know, Red Bulls, your Ferraris, your Mercedes, teams like that. And then the allowance for the use of more open source parts, which I think is actually kind of cool. Anyways, the teams have approved the rule changes, and now this has to be put before the World Motorsport Council for final approval and ratification. And the reports are suggesting that the governing body will do that via an e-vote. Everything seems to be doing electronically these days, as I'm sure many of you are finding too. So anyways, World Motorsport Council will probably meet early next week after the weekend. That was the governing body, FIA. And then afterwards, the World Motorsport Council will have their meeting sometime in mid-June. So this one's a couple weeks out from being completely approved and pushed through. So anyways, that seems to be the way forward. So anyways, a little bit more detail on that, and I think this is kind of cool. Anyways, the big focus in the past several weeks on this whole, I don't even want to call it emergency package, this whole deal that they've been working out, the big focus has been on the budget cap, and that's really been the big sticking point for the past several weeks. And it's really been pushed through and championed by FIA President Jean Todt, and there's a bunch of changes to the rules that are going to cover chassis and engine rules, sporting regulations, and wider spending limits. So as I mentioned, the budget cap going from 175 down to 145 million for next year, and then as we're saying, it's going to go down incrementally for the next couple of years. Anyways, Mattia Binotto said recently the $145 million limit was as low that Ferrari want to go. He told the Guardian newspaper, quote, "The $145 million level is already a new and demanding request compared to what was set out last June. It cannot be attained without further significant sacrifices, especially in terms of our human resources. If it was to get even lower, we would not want to be put in a position of having to look at further options for deploying our racing DNA," end quote. So obviously what Binotto is saying, that if it went any lower than that, that one of the ways that they would have to reduce costs is obviously by reducing the size of their workforce at Maranello, and certainly sounds like they are not really wanting to do that. I mean, some of these big F1 teams have several hundred people working for them. I mean, they really are big outfits. Excuse me, the people that we see on a race weekend, on the pit wall, in the garage, that really is a very small portion of some of these larger teams. Anyways, so in addition, like I said, the teams have also approved the rules to reduce costs in other areas. There's that discussion we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, token system for chassis development, and then also the radical aero development handicap system, where the worst performing teams are going to get the more wind tunnel time and CFD development time compared to the bigger teams. So they have Formula One is kind of avoided these obvious handicap systems in the past, but I think that in general, I think it's a good idea to really look at all options and put them all out there on the table, because even if we do get going racing in July, and you know the schedule's still a little bit up in the air, and we're going to get to that in a couple of minutes here, but I think that I've been saying for the past several weeks that they have to do what they need to do to make sure that Formula One will survive beyond the end of this year, and certainly in the mid to long term future. And like I say, I hate the term thinking outside the box. I think it's a really overused phrase, and I don't want to get into it. Anyways, it's just I just hate the phrase. Anyways, like I say, I prefer the them looking at a lot of different alternatives to really find new and creative ways to really look at the survivability of the sport. And I'm glad that they've really looked at all the options on the table, and I'm glad that all the teams have gotten on board, and that this thing is going to go through. And you know, like I say, I mean, there has to be discussion. I think that discussion is healthy, and I don't really view it, at least from where I'm sitting, that Ferrari's wanting to put a wrench in the works and try and bring everything to a grinding halt. So they had their concerns, as other teams had their concerns, especially the small teams. And every team is unique in that perspective, and I'm glad that that it actually went through, or at least from the team's perspective, and it sounds like it's just a formality before it's ratified and adopted. Anyways, moving along, let's talk about what might look, or what the what the schedule might look like. So as we were talking about last week, the schedule was or is still set to get going the beginning of July with back-to-back races at the Red Bull Ring at in Austria, followed by a pair of races at Silverstone. Now, this may be up in the air a little bit. Austria, I think, is about as set in stone as you can get, but the British Grand Prix is, it's a little bit up in the air at the moment, and it sounds like it may not actually go off at this point in time. I mean, Austria compared to Britain has fared better in this whole pandemic situation. UK obviously has been hit quite hard, and Formula One will not receive quarantine exemption from the British government, and that's really put the whole prospect of having a British Grand Prix at the beginning in July in real jeopardy. So Formula One has been formally told by the British government that they will not be granted an exemption for travelers arriving in the country to be put in quarantine. And well, that's not really a surprise. I mean, well, in one respect, it is, and another that it isn't. I mean, the thing is, there are quarantine restrictions put in place for people coming in from outside of the countries, and or internationally in countries all over the world. Anyways, so there was a briefing held at Downing Street on Friday afternoon, and British Home Secretary Priti Patel confirmed that all arrivals to the UK from June 8th onward will have to go into self-isolation for 14 days. And where I live in British Columbia on the west coast of Canada, that's been something that's been in place for a couple of months now. Provincial government has even set up something that if you do not have a quarantine plan in place, they'll set one up and house you somewhere if you are unable to get that thing get that organized. So UK government obviously going with something similar, but they did have a small list of exemptions for parties that would not have have to comply with that. And that did not include top level sports like Formula One. The UK government did say that the limited exemptions, which included road haulage, freight workers, medical professionals, especially those that are engaged in the fight against COVID-19, seasonal agricultural workers who will actually self-isolate on the facility or the property where they're working, and then essential workers or emergency workers. So, I mean, those are all very, I think, very logical and reasonable exemptions. Obviously, it would be a big disappointment if the British Grand Prix could not go off at that time. But of course, the underlying issue is that everybody has to be safe. And the last thing is that, as it seems to be coming down in a lot of places, that the big fear is that there will be a second wave of infections at some point. And most people, experts seem to be pointing at the fall. But if restrictions are lifted too soon, from what I understand, you know, that second wave could come a lot sooner. Anyways, yeah, it is disappointing. It is, but you know, we'll have to wait and see. Silverstone boss Stuart Pringle told Sky on Friday that he was very optimistic the government could change their stance, and some arrangement could be allowed for the British Grand Prix to go ahead at some point. And he had to say, quote, "I am very clear that the importance of the industry is understood by the government. I remain very optimistic that they will find a way. I'm very, very conscious that it's extremely complicated drafting these things and working up against ever-moving deadlines. It's not a task I'd wish to undertake. So I remain optimistic that a sensible and pragmatic solution, which puts the onus on the sport quite rightly to come up with the right solution, can be found." End quote. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a moment because Formula One or FIA says they could still go on even if there was a flare-up of even 10 or a dozen cases of coronavirus in the paddock. Anyways, I don't know. I'm not a medical professional by not even close to it, but it I do agree with what Pringle is saying, that the onus is more on the sport themselves, and if they can come up with something and they can present it to government and that's acceptable, and then maybe they too can get on the exemption list, well, that's a completely different ball game. But for now, British Grand Prix at the beginning of July, certainly very much in doubt. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And, well, We're going to pick up right where we left off before the break, and where there is doubts and maybe some uncertainty around the British Grand Prix going off at the beginning or middle of July. Talks with Hockenheim to host a Grand Prix in Germany have actually apparently picked up a little bit of speed in the past several days. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Hockenheim seemed very much like an outsider. It was more of a, yeah, we've been in touch. We've indicated to to F1 that we'd be interested in hosting an event, because had this whole pandemic situation not gone down over the past several months, if everything had just stayed the way it was, there would be no German Grand Prix this year. And that still blows my mind that there wouldn't have been a German Grand Prix. That's a bit of a different tangent. But certainly not something that that has been unusual in the past, or at least in recent history. I mean, the German Grand Prix has been off the calendar before. Anyways, they have ratcheted up the talks with Formula One, and it could very well go ahead if the planned race at Silverstone or the back-to-back races in July do not go off. Then perhaps Hockenheim will be an option. So Hockenheim Managing Director Jorn Teske told Motorsport.com that talks with Liberty Media had recently increased, and they are now actually focusing on the details. And Teske had to say, quote, "Is indeed true that we are still in ongoing talks with Formula One. We've moved from a casual conversation mode to a mode of sounding things out. We are sounding out under which conditions such a thing could be possible, such as the approval situation, infection situation, track availability, and of course, economics. These are all important issues," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, that is interesting that this is actually, you know, changed, but it seems completely logical because where there is doubt that the British Grand Prix may not go off as planned in the middle of July, that that Hockenheim, again, being in, you know, reasonable geographic convenience and location, just being an hour or so by air, you know, probably, well, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe hour and a half from the UK. Anyways, it is geographically convenient for Formula One. And, you know, if they're going to have different races in the continent, obviously it would be a lot more convenient to have it in Hockenheim after the Austrian Grand Prix, because as the crow flies, Austria and Germany obviously share a border, and it would be just that much more convenient. But I think too, you know, the fact that you know, Chase Carey came out a couple of weeks ago and they've you know, released the schedule of you know, 15 to 18 races, which to me still seems like an extremely optimistic scenario based on what's going on. And I mean, even so, I mean, I know that we're looking at getting the season going in just over a month from now. I mean, as I record this show, it is the 22nd of May 2020. The 5th of July, guys, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that seems like a very, very long time away. I mean, consider how much has happened in the past couple of months. You know, a month and a half from now seems like a very, very long time from now indeed. But I think that it is important that if that Hockenheim, or sorry, if the British Grand Prix does not go down at Silverstone in the middle of July as planned, that that they do have some alternatives. And it is going to be fluid. I mean, there is no doubt about it. I mean, that, you know, we're going to talk about here in a moment as well, but apparently that, you know, that the U.S. Grand Prix at Austin at the Circuit of the Americas, you know, later on this fall, you know, currently slated for the 22nd to the 25th of October, could be in doubt. So we'll see how that, you know, goes. But anyway, so we'll have to wait and see whether or not things get going at, you know, with a replacement at Hockenheim. Certainly in its current guise, maybe not my favorite track, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers, you know, to borrow an old phrase at this point. If the season gets up and running, it would just be great to have Formula One, even if it's behind closed doors. It is weird. Just on a bit of a side note here, I did watch some Bundesliga soccer last week, and it was very, very strange to see, you know, top level, you know, soccer being played in front of an empty stadium. I mean, you had, you know, the coaches, you had the subs, you have the officials, everybody, you know, socially distanced, physically distanced from one another, and just it's a very, very bizarre and surreal scenario. Even when you go out in your own local community, and I went out to get a couple of things this afternoon from the store, and the same thing, as you see people talking on the sidewalk, you know, 8 feet apart from another. Is it's like, you know, 2 months ago, if somebody did that, you'd say, "What's this dude's problem?" It's like, do I need to take a shower or something? Do I smell? But now, if you see anybody closer than 6 or 8 feet, you're kind of like, okay, why is this guy all up in my grill? Anyways. Yeah. So we'll see whether or not in the next week or so, between this show and next week, whether or not we get some clarity on both the situation with the British Grand Prix. Also, possibly if Hockenheim comes on the calendar at some point. But certainly it seems like a viable or a possible reality now. And that really has sort of picked up speed in the past couple of weeks. Also, I haven't heard anything more about Imola being an option. That one was out there a couple of weeks ago too. So I mean, there are some opportunities out there. I think it really goes to really depends on what the situation is in each at each track, each country, and as things progress or regress, as the case may be, over the next coming weeks and months. Anyways, as I was just mentioning, the U.S. Grand Prix at in Austin, Texas, that's scheduled for later on this year at the end of October, very much up in the air at the moment. So the senior public health official in the state of Texas said that large events are unlikely to take place in the Texan city before the end of the year, and that's no different than any other places. I mean, again, it depends where you live and what the situation is. Where I live, fortunately, we've fared fairly well here. Our provincial health officer has just flat out said that there are going to be no mass gatherings for the foreseeable future. They haven't even put a date on it. They're very much watching the numbers and the data and the infections and the cases. And I know a lot of places, I mean, in Europe especially, have said, you know, no mass gatherings before the 31st of August, et cetera, et cetera. But here, we've taken the stance that, or the position that that they're just off the table for the time being. Restaurants and bars are opened with a limited capacity. I mean, religious services are limited to 50 people, and you know, there's all sorts of things. And you know, we're slowly getting going, but to think now that just the whole prospect of having mass gatherings, be it for sports or religion or a concert, you know, that just really, or even going to the shopping mall, there's a big mall just down the road from where I live. I just can't imagine going into a situation just to go buy a pair of jeans or a pair of shoes or something, and going in the mall on a busy Saturday or a Sunday or a Friday night, some of these peak hours. Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to think about that twice. Anyways, when it comes to things like that, Texas obviously taking the more conservative approach. So Austin is operating what they call their stage 3 of their reopening plans after their initial lockdown, which allows groups of up to 10 low-risk people to gather. So the status in Austin would have to go to stage 1 before major events are going to be considered. So the Circuit of Americas currently is closed, although it did have a charity event earlier this month when members of the public were actually allowed to pay to drive a lap of the circuit. Now, how cool would that be? Even in my car, and I drive an SUV, I think it'd be kind of cool to take it for a lap around one of these circuits. Obviously, it wouldn't be doing it in about a minute 35 or whatever a lap of the Circuit of the Americas is in a Formula One car, but would be very cool. Anyways, Dr. Mark Escott, who's the interim medical director of the health authority for the Austin Public Health, stressed for the time being that allowing large gatherings is obviously not a priority. And Dr. Escott had to say, quote, "The large events are the first thing that we turned off and are going to be the last thing we're going to turn back on because of the risk of exposing lots of people to one another, particularly individuals of the same household. We are working on a plan to help forecast what we think is going to be reasonable, but looking through the end of December, we don't have any indications at this stage that we would be able to mitigate the risk enough to have large events, particularly ones with over 2,500 people," end quote. So, yeah, obviously, you're going to get more than 2,500 people out to Circuit of Americas for a Formula One race. And that really is the big question. I'm involved in my professional association, and we're looking ahead to planning for our AGM and professional development days for next year. And, well, with, mass gatherings of more than 50 people banned currently, not permitted in this province, that we don't know how we're going to even plan that far out. Are we planning, for in person? Are we going to be planning to do a virtual thing with webinars and, do everything in a virtual environment? I think that we're going to probably have to plan for both and then just see closer to the time what the actual situation is. But, you know, mass gatherings of any kind, completely off the table for the time being, just in all walks of life. Anyways, the FIA says 10 coronavirus cases would not stop a Formula One race. Now, of course, a couple of months ago at the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne, I was going to say Adelaide. I was, you know, I guess maybe I grew up in an era when the Formula One raced in Adelaide rather than Melbourne. Remember all the way back when 2 months ago or 2.5 months ago when this all started, of course, it was a very, very different situation, especially in the Western part of the world where the COVID-19 was still, still percolating up through them, through different countries at different times. I mean, it had already been going on for a month or two in China and places in Italy, Iran, places like that at that point. But we were still it was still a very new and scary thing, still is a very scary thing. But that was just a very odd situation, just how that all unraveled with the Australian Grand Prix. And it looked like, you hear some of the reports that have come out afterwards. It looked like all the teams had wanted to, and then it was on, then it was off, and then it was on again, sort of wavered back and forth. Anyways, of course, ultimately it was canceled, and really the big thing I think that really pushed it over the top was the fact that one of the McLaren team members tested positive for COVID-19, and from then everything kind of snowballed, and the race the whole weekend was called off. Now, with another 8 or 9 races called off after that, the Formula One has a plan in place to create what they call a biosphere at events to get the season underway. And they have also been having meetings to discuss protocols for running these events. And this would include Formula One paddock personnel being tested for COVID-19 on basically an every other day basis. The FIA's chief medical commissioner, Gerard Salion, is confident that any positive COVID-19 test results could be handled in a way that would prevent the cancellation of any future races, like we saw with Australia. The big difference, of course, is that if it's going to be, especially like in Austria, it's going to be behind closed doors. You know, you're not going to be inconveniencing thousands of people, especially, a good portion of people that are coming in from overseas, for probably part of a holiday or a visit to a different country. I mean, if it's going to be this bubble of just Formula One teams and drivers going around from track to track behind closed doors, that's going to be a bit of a different situation. Salial had to say, quote, "I think the situation is quite different between Melbourne and now because the knowledge of the virus is quite different. It's possible to prevent and anticipate quite a lot of things. If we have one positive case or maybe 10 positive cases, it's possible to manage perfectly with a special track, a special pathway for the positive cases. Medically speaking, it's not a problem. In terms of sporting and media consequence, it's quite different. We have to try and anticipate that to know where the right line beyond which it's impossible to continue. But I think it's not a problem for us now," end quote. Anyways, that is very interesting. I mean, he sounds very confident that should something happen, somebody contract the virus and test positive within that Formula One bubble, that they feel that they could contain that and still manage to operate in that situation. And of course, I mean, if you're a top level medical professional like that, of course, you're going to have a lot more information and a better understanding than probably 99.9% of the rest of us. FIA President Jean Todt said he was obviously very eager to avoid a similar situation of how things got out of control in Australia. And Todt had to say, quote, "We want to make sure that arriving at the first event on the 2020 calendar, we don't face another unpredictable situation. Our experts are working on that," end quote. So, yeah, obviously, Tote stating the obvious. Brought to you by the Department of Redundancy Department. Anyway, so we will wait and see, but it sounds like they really have working on it, and that they know what's you know, they need to take care of and what they need to do in order to get everything going, and most importantly, a contingency plan and you know, a proper plan in place should the you know, what's a very obvious you know, danger or possibility that it could be handled quickly. And of course, if somebody is you know, test positive in the paddock, the big concern, of course, is further infection and transmission of the disease beyond there. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. And Ross Brawn, the sporting director at Formula One, thinks that in 6 months, Formula One will be in what he calls a great place. Well, that remains to be seen, but I think that it is encouraging to hear that somebody that's right up there with a good knowledge of Formula One, who's been in the sport for a very, very long time and involved in many different aspects of Formula One, is so upbeat and positive about it. Anyhow, Braun was talking to motorsport.com, and he was just reacting to an exclusive video that they had on their website after he was voted as Formula One's best technical director in a series that they put together about the greatest F1 team. Anyways, Braun had to say, quote, "I think these are very difficult times we are facing at the moment. It is great to remember the fantastic we've had in Formula One and indeed the fantastic times we're going to have in the future. And it gives us inspiration to find our way through these difficult times. F1 was in a great place 6 months ago, and it's going to be in a great place in another 6 months. This has really boosted me, and it's very special," end quote. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, he's talking a little bit about this special series that motorsport.com did, so I think he's being a little bit sentimental. And, of course, he has some more insight to these sort of things than the rest of us do. But I don't know. A month ago, I mean, for those of you that listened to the interview I did with Formula Money's Christian Silt about a month or 6 weeks ago, they were in a very precarious situation. Of course, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, things were in a very different situation. A lot of things were very much unknown at that point. And of course, this whole pandemic situation changes on a daily and a weekly basis. But I don't know if it's you know, you can really get too excited too soon. I think obviously a big thing to really get to Formula One pointed on the right direction again was this budget cap, bringing in all these cost cutting measures to really try and keep the spending under control, especially in this the situation that we find ourselves in right now, where there aren't a lot of revenues coming in for the teams. There's no racing coming on. There's you know, there's nothing being televised. So all the, you know, most of their usual revenue streams have dried up, and until we get racing again, until things get back to, well, obviously not to normal, but getting closer to normal, that will be a better situation. But, you know, his positivity is something good to hear, but I think we're going to have to see a lot more of positive things happening before we can really get too excited about it. And I should mention just before I go on that another team or another venue that that could be a possible replacement for the British Grand Prix, should it not go off, would be the Hungarian Grand Prix. That was a little bit up in the air about you know, a week or two ago, just with the way that you know, they've been talking about doing you know, mass public gatherings and things like that in Hungary as well. But again, much like Hockenheim is fairly close proximity to the Red Bull Ring in Austria, the Hungara Ring is only about 400 or 500 kilometers away from the Red Bull Ring. So that would be another good, you know, a good option. So we'll see whether or not that comes off or not. I mean, the Hungarian Grand Prix still on the schedule from July 30th to August 2nd, whether or not that could be moved up and switched at some point. Again, Hungary, the Hungaro Ring, never really been my favorite track. I mean, the one thing, I mean, it was supposed to be kind of like a road track out in the country. I mean, it's kind of cool, but it doesn't really lend too many opportunities for overtaking. And we've seen some processions around there, but at this point, should it go off, I'm not really going to be too fussy about it. It would just be nice to see some racing basically anywhere if we can get a Grand Prix going. Anyway, so let's talk now about Sebastian Vettel. Remember that guy? Yeah, we haven't talked about him very much. Well, not this week. Anyways, so of course, as you expect, after a little bit of time has passed, that more information will start to trickle out into the public realm, and you know, the Vettel and Ferrari situation. Obviously, that was just going to be a matter of time. Anyways, Mattia Binotto, Ferrari Formula One team principal, said that the earlier this week that Ferrari and Vettel did not share the same goals. Well, I think that's it would be fairly, I think, deductible by the rest of us. I mean, Vettel has been there for several years now. I mean, he'll be ending a 6-year run at Maranello at the end of this year before he leaves, and will be replaced by Carlos Sainz, who's coming over from McLaren for 2021. Anyways, it is interesting you know, that this comes out, but Binotto has said at Motor Valley Fest in Modena earlier this week, quote, "We closed a cycle with Sebastian. Sebastian has been working in our team for 6 years. I admire Sebastian. I admire him as a person and as a professional driver. I hold him in great esteem. Beyond that, over the last weeks, the world has changed, not only from an economic point of view, but also from a technical and sporting point of view. There are challenges ahead and obstacles which are going to be difficult. We are laying the foundations for our future, and we want to have a specific perspective. We talked with Sebastian and found we didn't share the same goals, short or long-term goals," end quote. And yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Sainz, a younger driver in his early 20s compared to Vettel, who's now going into, well, I mean, he's, what, 32, 33, not old by any stretch of the imagination. He probably figures he's got another contract or two left with him in Formula One, but I guess unless he really comes out, we get some details on what he wanted in terms of things. But I still kind of see a lot of parallels between Vettel and Ferrari in 2020, as we saw with Daniel Ricciardo and Red Bull in 2018. Just seeing the writing on the wall that a younger, very aggressive, very talented driver, and Max Verstappen was in the team. I think that Daniel Ricciardo, he saw the writing on the wall, and I think that maybe Sebastian Vettel did as well. And the fact that that Charles is going to be the guy that they're going to build that team around over the next several years, obviously having signed a fairly lengthy contract till the end of what, 2024, 2025. It's a good length contract if you're Charles Leclerc. So the big interesting thing will be, well, I mean, there's a lot of different interesting aspects to this story, but Vettel moving on and Carlos Sainz coming in, obviously that dynamic between himself and Charles Leclerc is going to be fascinating to watch. But also, where is Seb going to go now? And I think that is, the $64,000 question is, where does Sebastian Vettel go after Ferrari? There are options, there are still things out there that haven't been decided, and things that could happen. And, it just some seem a little bit more logical than others. But before we talk about maybe some different options for Sebastian Vettel, Jean Todt, from the FIA president, and he was team principal at Ferrari during the Schumacher glory years, the beginning of the 2000s, and he was in charge watching Schumacher. He was in charge of the team when Schumacher won 5 consecutive world championships. I mean, mean, we thought it was unprecedented then, but you know, you look at Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes are doing now. I mean, a lot of parallels there. Anyhow, that's a different story for a different time. Anyways, Chantot had to say that, you know, he really feels that a lack of what he called unity of Ferrari has been one of the key reasons for Vettel's, well, I mean, he's just calling a failure to emulate Michael Schumacher and win, not just one Formula One world championship, but multiple world championships with the Scuderia. So that is very interesting. But I mean, on the surface, I think maybe this is one that doesn't really require too much thought, especially when you think about, okay, well, how many team principals have they had in there over the past several years? I mean, they've had, Stefano Domenicali, and Arriva Bene. Now you're on to Mattia Bonato. I mean, over the past 4 or 5, 6 years, you've got three guys right there. So, I mean, when you have a lack of stability in an organization, any organization or business, I mean, that's going to cause, it's not really a great foundation. And I think that that leadership comes from the top down. And when you're going through, team principals every couple of years, that's got to have a big effect on the organization that you're running, because each one of these people, they're going to come in with their own ideas, their own set of values, their own managerial style and their own agendas and what they want to do and, how they're going to go about and achieve that. And I thought it was very interesting. If you go and read Ross Brawn's book that came out a couple of years ago, what is it called? Total Competition. I think it was very interesting because he always viewed these sorts of situations as basically like a 3-year project. And I think that was a very ambitious target to set, where he thought, well, okay, it takes a year to get in there and understand what the situation is. The second year, you're enacting changes, and by the third year, you're going to start seeing improvements. He thought, well, I seem to remember him saying, winning races by year three, that seems fairly ambitious. I mean, especially if you take the example of Renault in current Formula One, who are now several years into this and, not even really, competing for podiums yet. Anyways, he did see it as a more of a multi-year kind of a different step process. So you get a different person in, like, say, Mattia Bonato. He's going to have his own different ideas and views and goals. You have Arriva Bene and Domenicali. All these different guys are going to have different opinions and different ideas to do that. But anyways, Tote went to say, quote, "The result, good or bad, you can always explain it. Together with Michael, the whole team at Ferrari, we had so much success because we had a very united, strong team who were supportive to each other, mainly in the difficult times than in the good times. It's easy to be together when all is good, but you see a good sailor in a rough sea. When we are in a rough sea, we are all in the same boat, and I think that's what's made the difference," end quote. You know, the first thing, as I'm even reading that and I'm digesting that that statement from Chantot, the first thing that pops into my mind is Mercedes. And you look at that team. I mean, they go out. Of course, when you're winning, everybody's in a good mood. But you can tell that this is a team that's motivated. And I think that is a great part of their success. And I think that's why it's very interesting. If you have a Netflix subscription, you haven't seen season 2 of F1 Drive to Survive, go back or go out there and watch it now, because I think one of the interesting, fascinating episodes that they do covered the German Grand Prix last year. I mean, that was supposed to be a big Mercedes party. They'd come up on, what was it, a special milestone. I forget exactly what it was at the time, but they had all their, all the garb done up, kind of going back to like the 1950s, a special paint job on the car. And because it rained, that really threw that variable into it, and it was just disastrous. And, you see like Lewis Hamilton afterwards talking to Toto Wolff, and Lewis, he's just like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, man." He's so upset, and you can tell how bad it was. And you can tell that was a real nadir, a real difficult point for them. And then you even go back a couple of years previous, where I think it was the, what would that have been, 2017, 2018? I guess it was the time when they had a disastrous sort of start to the season, and then they went away after Monaco, and then they came back to Canada. Canada, and after the Canadian Grand Prix, they really buckled down. I think they went on they basically worked 24/7 after Monaco to get the car sorted out, to iron out all the little problems that they had, and they came back and they worked through it. And from then they were just they were rock solid, and doing the things that we expect Mercedes to do. And Ferrari 15-20 years ago, exactly the same way. I mean, in the early 2000s, late 90s, well, especially the early 2000s, I mean, that team very much in a similar way. And I think that it's very insightful to get that that little looking through the window from somebody like Jean Todt, who oversaw that team and can see now the a guy like Sebastian Vettel, four-time world champion, not achieving, and I think the key phrase in there was not winning world championships with Ferrari and not emulating Michael Schumacher. The world championships really jumped out at me. Anyways, time for one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. A couple more things to talk about before we shut it down for this weekend, or for this week, pardon me. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. A couple more things to talk about to Sebastian Vettel. Apparently, Christian Horner has jumped in and had a couple things to say, and he said the dynamic Red Bull racing wouldn't work with what he calls two alpha males, obviously that being Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen. And yeah, well, is that really not a bit of an obvious statement? I mean, there's a little bit of history between these two guys, and I certainly don't see that. I mean, yeah, he did say previously that they wouldn't be able to afford the big salary that Sebastian Vettel would want if he was to sign there. But certainly, I think just from a personality point of view, Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen in the same team, that could be somewhat volcanic. Anyways, he had to say, and this is Horner, I should say, had to say, quote, "We have a long-term agreement with Max Verstappen. Alex Albon is doing a good job. We've got a good team dynamic within the team. Experience shows that two alpha males, it doesn't tend to pan out well. Sebastian is still a very competitive Grand Prix driver. I don't think it could be conducive for our team to have two alphas. We're happy with the driver lineup we have. I'm sure he's not short of options moving forward, but he's chosen that it hasn't worked out for him at Ferrari," end quote. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they do have a good lineup of drivers there. And honestly, I'd like to see what Alex Albon can do. I think that he really showed something when he was moved up to Red Bull from Toro Rosso midway through last year, replacing Pierre Gasly. And I'd like to see what he could do. I mean, this year's going to be a bit of a weird one, but obviously with the late start to the season, considering everything else that's going on. But Alex Albon, I think, obviously you have to consider the possibility if a driver like Sebastian Vettel is out there and is available on the driver's market. But at the same point, I would almost hate to see a guy like Alex Albon, given the boots for Sebastian Vettel, because I'd like to see what Albon could do, not just in terms of how he competes with other drivers, but also I'd like to see how he matches up against Max Verstappen. Obviously, Albon and Verstappen, two young, very, very good drivers. Zach Brown, CEO of McLaren, says that Sebastian Vettel was not considered as a possible replacement because Danny Ricciardo was already the number one guy to replace Carlos Sainz, who has gone over to Ferrari. Anyways, he also believes that there were more fireworks in the Ferrari team involving Vettel and Charles Leclerc once the season gets underway. And that will be interesting because Vettel really doesn't have to hold back. I mean, obviously he's not going to do anything, I think, to really drastically upset things, but I think he doesn't need to toe the line. So, I mean, I think that's a very good observation by Zach Brown. I mean, Vettel has nothing to lose now. I mean, if he steps on Leclerc's toes, then big deal. I mean, he's not going to be there next year, whereas Leclerc's going to be there for a long time. I mean, Sebastian, I'm sure he still obviously wants to win, but he might not be willing in certain situations to be what's the word, flexible, relenting, I don't know. So that should be very interesting. Anyways, going back to the seat at McLaren, Brown said, quote, obviously Seb's an awesome driver and a four-time champion, but I think we were pretty far down the path in the off season, and we knew we would either land with Daniel or Carlos. We never really entertained anyone beyond that, especially with Seb's late breaking news. We were pretty far down the path at that point, end quote. So that is interesting. It sounds like just from that admission that things were in the already in the works there, and Brown did say he went on that he knew that Sainz was looking at a possible opportunity to go to Ferrari, because I mean Vettel he was out of contract at the end of this year anyways, and we did see first of all Verstappen locked down one of the seats at Red Bull. And then we saw Leclerc lock down one of the seats at at Ferrari, getting all out of hand. Because, I mean, all the guys in the top three teams were all out of contract for next year. And, I mean, Horner was saying a couple of months ago he felt that once one of them signed, it would kind of they'd all fall like dominoes. And he felt that at some point that it'd basically be status quo for 2021. Obviously, the whole world has changed in the past couple of months, and Formula One as well. But an interesting admission that Brown felt that Sainz had been eyeing that Ferrari seat for some time, and so had been looking for a possible replacement. So it'd be very interesting to know how long maybe this had been going underneath, because I mean a couple of months ago, I mean there was and of course this was only a rumor and speculation, but perhaps there was maybe a possible move in the works to McLaren for Sebastian Vettel, but Brown obviously has quashed that. Now the interesting one is Renault. Who's going to go there? I mean, it's not really a top seat considering where they are, but I mean, in theory, this is team still with a lot of potential. And there was an article on Formula1.com earlier this week looking at some of the guys that may be there. And they go through, and one of them is some of the guys in the Renault Sport Academy. There's Max Futrell, Christian Lungard, Guan Yu Zhou, Oscar Piastri, and Adrian David. David, he's French, and I don't know. Interesting, right? I think this is a team that maybe needs to put in and try and get maybe a bit of a bigger name, considering I think they need to. I think they need to make a bit of a splash just to kind of indicate, that there is, that this is a team that still wants to achieve something in Formula One. So the three names that they bring up, and they all seem fairly logical. One is Nico Hülkenberg, who was with the team, but isn't there this year because being replaced by Esteban Ocon. So kind of the odd man out. And then, but now with Danny Ricciardo leaving to go over to McLaren. But, that one seems, I think that one's kind of run its course. I think that if he was going to stay with Renault, that that they would have found a way to make that work. So the other two names out there, Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel, and that's where it gets interesting. And I could see maybe one of those two guys over Nico Hülkenberg at this moment. I like Nico Hülkenberg. I think he's a fairly decent driver, but Alonso and Sebastian Vettel, I think that if you're Renault, I think you really have to look at both of those guys fairly seriously before you make a decision about how you're going to move forward. I mean, Sebastian Vettel, obviously a guy, four-time world champion, still in his early 30s. I still think that he's got a lot of left to prove in Formula One. I think he can still get it done in Formula One. And I think maybe he just needs that that opportunity, whether or not Renault is that opportunity, and whether or not he would be content with maybe fighting it out for something outside of the podium and maybe helping that team. That's really... That's a big question, right? Because they're not going to be able to even offer him podiums unless they've come out of nowhere and really designed a winner for this year. I mean, or maybe not even a winner, but a car that can maybe on the outside chance compete for a podium, right? I mean, that realistically could be the scenario. But from the other side, I mean, Seb, I mean, he brings so much experience with him. He's been with Red Bull. He's been with Ferrari. I mean, the knowledge and the experience that he could bring to that team, I mean, just must make Cyril Abiteboul's mouth water to get in a driver and a guy of that that caliber into the team. Whether or not that's something that they would want to consider, I'm sure they're considering it, whether or not they can pull it off, and whether or not it would be attractive for Sebastian Vettel, that remains a big question. Of course, you have to look too. I mean, the Mercedes is still up in the air for next year. I mean, I think it's obviously a matter of time before they announce a deal with Lewis Hamilton to re-up with them. I still think that Lewis has got maybe one, maybe two contracts left in F1. I mean, mid-30s now. I mean, he's still best guy on out there, still the fastest guy in Formula One, still chasing down all those records. I mean, he could be the record holder in so many categories by the time it's all said and done. Excuse me, but then you got Valtteri Bottas, who's on a 1-year deal. It's kind of like a rolling thing. It's just Valtteri, okay, season over, okay, we'll give you another year. But Vettel, maybe if you're Vettel, you got to consider that one too. And Toto Wolff did said that was a situation that they're going to look at. I mean, again, money not an option for Mercedes to bring a guy like Sebastian Vettel in. Would it work between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel? Great question. I don't know. I mean, at this moment, 10 world titles between the two of them. It really would come down, I think, to a big question of, would you want that dynamic between the team or between those two guys? Or would it be like, a situation like Christian Horner was just talking about in the, we were talking about a few minutes ago that, would it work when you have two alpha males in the team, like Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel? Anyways, so that is a possibility. Sebastian Vettel Vettel to Renault, obviously some interesting scenario for both parties. But then the other one, Fernando Alonso. Now Fernando's over 40, won two world titles with Renault almost 20 years ago when he was a young guy, just had only been in Formula One for a very short time. And again, I can see the parallels. I can see the the reason that that his name gets thrown into that conversation, but. It is interesting because, when you think about it, a lot of people, when Fernando left Formula One, thought that he should be more than a double world champion. And obviously, I think there's a very good, a very good case for that. And this is a guy that's always done well and has gotten results out of cars that's often were not very good. It was able to get more out of these cars than was really expected. Now, would he want to come back to a team that would, again, very much like Sebastian Vettel, would not be able to really offer him the opportunity to win, or at least that's what the expectation is at the moment. So that is interesting. And of course, again, the other reason why his name will get thrown in there is because he's repeatedly said that once the rule changes come in, that for 2021, now 2022. That should he find them favorable, that he would certainly consider coming back. And his name getting thrown into Renault, that makes a lot of sense because that's about the only team that he hasn't burned any bridges with. So I can see that that happening. I mean, that unfortunately, I think, is going to be one of Fernando's legacies in Formula One. Is on one side you have the camp, the people that are saying, oh, he didn't win as much as his talents deserved. But on the other hand, you have to admit he has burned a lot of bridges in the sport, and I think that that is something that that will be part of his legacy as well. So, anyways, the Renault situation could be very interesting to watch. But Valtteri Bottas, as I just mentioned, kind of in this rolling 1-year contract since he's been there since the beginning of 2017. Anyways, Toto Wolff, Mercedes team principal, revealed that when he was first asked to support Valtteri Bottas way back when, he wasn't interested, but he changed his mind after meeting Valtteri in person. So anyways, this is going back almost 20 years to the early 2000s when Wolff put his own racing activities on hold to start focusing on business interests. And after being successful, he decided to look for different ways to invest in motor racing, including backing young drivers. So Anyways, way back in 2007, 2008, Wolf was approached by the boss of Formula Renault, Team Motor Park Academy, and his name was Timo Rumpfkehl. And this was all with the idea to try and help Valtteri Bottas. Anyways, he decided not to at that point because he'd been, he said, disappointed by previous association with drivers. So anyways, Toto Wolff had to say, quote, "When the investment side kicked off in motor racing, I got more involved. In a way, I tried to give back to young drivers what I lacked, and that was financing and guidance. One day, I got called by a friend who ran the Formula Renault team in Germany, Timo, and he said, there's an exceptional boy who is racing for an underfinanced Finnish private team, and he's very much at the front of the grid, and I'm going to take him for next year. He hasn't got any manager." And I said, "No, thank you very much. I've had bad experiences with some drivers who were grateful when they were lacking support and world champions and forgetting once they started to earn money. I don't want to do this." And he said, "Fair enough," end quote. So very interesting, you know, it's kind of like, you know, all this time later that has kind of come full circle. Anyways, a couple months after that that phone call, Rumpfkehl called Toto and said, "I just wanted to let him know that Valtteri won his first two Formula Renault races." And he said, "It was expected. Didn't you say that?" And then he won the first race with 27 seconds to second place and the second race with 24 seconds to second. And then Toto said, "Yeah, okay, well, that was unusual." And then Bottas did call him up and asked to meet. And then he walked into the office and he said, "I'm not interested in looking out for a manager. I just want your advice because there are a few groups that are interested in supporting me, and I would just like to hear your opinion." Toto said he went on to give us an opinion, and he ended up with four investors, a couple of friends, including Mika Hakkinen, Didier Coton, and to help Valtteri in his years. And he said Wolf did go on to say that at that point, you know, going back, you know, over 10, well, you know, going on, well, 14 years ago, 15 years ago, that that Bottas made a very, very strong impression. So very interesting that, you know, all these years later, he did, you know, come back, you know, to race for Toto in Formula One. But I still think it is an interesting situation that despite what Bottas has done for the team, for Mercedes over the past several years, you know, won a handful of races, which you might expect, you know, maybe not a real competitive rival to Lewis Hamilton just yet. But I mean, he certainly does. He's certainly good for a win every now and then. He's good for a lot of points, a lot of podiums, and helping that team win world championships. And I think, you know, from that point of view, he's ideal and does not get into the conflicts and the, you know, all the issues that they obviously had with Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg previously. So that was kind of cool to see. Anyways, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to get in touch, as always, do so on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or via email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Take care of yourselves, and we'll talk again this time next week. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.